Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts
Look at that. She signed it. Well, hello, brains. Look at that. We are right here with Sharon Valente. And both of us have had a hectic day, but we're going to sit down. We're going to have a great conversation, and we are going to enjoy you. Y-O-U here on the edge. Sharon has some tools to help people uncover the underlying root cause to havoc and stress. How to release it. You know, she's been through a lot herself. She's going to tell us a little bit about her story, but then we're going to have some fun with Sharon. We're going to ask her some just random questions and see what she comes up with, because she is a winner. Brains, help me welcome to the edge, Sharon Valente, right there. How you doing, baby?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I can't complain about nothing. Well, I could, but we already did it, so it's over with now.
That's right. Nobody's listening anyhow, right?
Nobody's listening, but yeah, you know what? People say that all the time, but people really do care. They really do care, and they turn their pain into their passion, which also can turn into their payday.
That's right.
So many people are going through so much, girl, with that doggone COVID and the weather. Look at that tornado. This has hit Kentucky. I can't believe that.
Yeah, that was unfortunate what happened down there. It's really bad news.
It is. And, you know, I wonder really what is God's plan for the rest of us? Not the ones that have left us, but the ones that are left behind. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, and I might be able to answer some of that.
Okay, well, good. I'm ready. So please tell us, you know, how you show up in the world.
Sure. So a little bit about my background and what led me to do what I'm doing today is, like many people my age, I came from a background of incredibly strict parents, mostly my mother. But on top of that, my parents were alcoholics, and my mother was a very violent alcoholic. So I received lots and lots of beatings and punishments of various forms all through my growing up years. And I learned at a very early age to become a people pleaser. I would go out of my way from the age of 4 to do things in order to get mommy to love me, because I had a belief I was unlovable, unwanted, and could never be enough for my mother. So I at 4 would wash dishes and wait for that praise to come, and thus began the trail of what everybody goes through, learning to look for love, approval, appreciation, support, friendship, everything outside of myself. And that continued for a long part of my life. When I was 8 years old, my father molested me, and that was, I shut that down for a long time, because I had been taught that nobody's ever supposed to touch you in that way. And when I awakened to that moment, I couldn't tell my mother, and I was confused by what my father was doing. And I was later in life able to see that I blamed myself for his actions. I made it my fault. Even to the point where I had the childlike thought, if I wasn't alive, he would never have done that. I couldn't make this hero a bad person. I couldn't do it. So it shut it all down for years and years and years. And because of the early childhood violent environment, which was just so familiar to me, it's all I knew.
Was this ongoing, continuous?
With my mother, the violence, not with my father that I remember.
Okay.
Once was enough, believe me.
Once was too much. But I just was wondering, you know, was your mother ever aware of this?
No, not until I was in my mid-30s, I think I told her. Wow. And the response I got from her was, Well, your father always was a pervert, so no support there. And you know, that just could have been her way of dealing with it. It doesn't matter. It's way, way behind me. But there was a lot of emotional damage done along the way. A lot of that I'm not enoughness, not good enough, smart enough, pretty enough. We all have some form of not enoughness, and then I sought out the only thing that I'd ever known, more abuse in a marriage that lasted 16 years. And it was incredibly violent. It was my mother and then some. But again, I made everything my fault and I believed I deserved it. And I believed the good life was only for other people and it just wasn't for me. And then one day the violence was so bad and I just said to myself, I can't take this anymore. I'm going to die if I stay here. So I made arrangements for my two children and myself to move out. And I'm not making light of this because life was a nightmare during those years. The fear that we lived in and the constant shaking and tiptoeing around because we're afraid of being screamed and yelled at and beaten and blah, blah, blah. How could you stay in it? Again, it's all you ever know if that's been your life for a child. And much as you long for something else, you don't have the wherewithal at that moment in that mental state you're in of worthlessness and no self-esteem and you believe you're ugly. You don't know how to get yourself out of it. And you don't know what the unknown is because you can't, you're not in a mindset to feel good about the possibilities of the unknown. We live in that doom and gloom and the victim mindset. So that day, my life just changed. I said enough. And I began reading books, participating in meetup groups that were vibrant. And somewhere along the line, the secret came out and that was all uplifting. And everybody was like law of attraction. And of course I dove right into that because it was so new, so refreshing. And then that just began a really strong journey of uncovering all of those hidden beliefs that I had and questioning them.
So you're an only child?
I have a sister who's 9 years younger than me who got involved in drugs and became paralyzed and, you know, just all sorts of.
Yeah, and you don't really know. I mean, nobody, even though you live in the same house with people, nobody knows the other person's story. Your right. mother didn't know your story as well. So right. you went through all of this to teach you a lesson. I know that seems tough.
No, but it's again, true. It's
you
true.
Know, and I really empathize with women, children, and men, mm-hmm. the victim and the abuser, because hurt people.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you pull back the layers of this, I am just so glad to find that, you know, you were a big old oyster and you are the pearl inside, because you were able to transform these things, to create courses, to work with other women, to work with young victims, to help them really release this. What is the process of release? So, you know, they say forgiveness is for you, but release is for the other person. Explain that to me.
Well, I don't forgive people anymore mm-hmm. because for me, my interpretation of that or how it lands with me is if I have to say I forgive you, I'm still holding you hostage in the back of my mind. I don't ever want to forget, but I also don't want to dwell on things. So if I say, oh, Dad, I forgive you, then I'm still in the back of my mind holding him as this perverted child molester. If, on the other hand, I know that in any given moment, whether it's a serial killer, a murderer, whatever it is, we, in that demented moment, are doing the best we can. A second later, we might have regret. You know, I had that deranged mindset. That is his mindset. I accept it, just like I accept it's a rainy day or a sunny day. And the same with my mother. They're doing the best they can with the mental capacity they have in that moment. I accept it, and I've moved on. I don't have to stay with it. I don't need to forgive. I just, for me, acceptance is key to peacefulness in my life mm-hmm. because I'm not resisting or opposing anything. It's just, I accept it. That's it. Just,
you know, and my mother was a person that never said, I'm sorry. That doesn't mean that she's, you know, She was a bad person. She says she found that to be very shallow and very empty.
Yeah.
Because people understand their intentions on what they're meaning to do from the get-go.
Yeah.
And then you throw this blanket over someone. You've murdered their child, you've, you know, robbed them, you've disrespected them, you beat them, and now you use these three, you know, these two words, I'm sorry. Yeah. And that's supposed to make everything right. And it doesn't. And I'm with you on that. And unconditional love. I tell people all the time, I don't practice that. My love is sacred. It is precious. And I don't give it to people unconditionally. There are some conditions on that.
Right.
You know?
And I understand that too. Unconditional love is, first of all, love is not someone's to take from us. It's ours to give.
That's right.
And it's saying, you know, it's theirs to give us. We can't demand it from somebody. I want to talk about the what I call one-liners that we, most of us heard growing up. So did you ever hear, you made your bed, now go lie in it?
Girl,
Did you ever hear, children should be seen and not heard?
Yes.
Okay, so go back to the first one. You made your bed, lie in it. As a child hearing that many times, what was reflected back to you about you? When you hear that, what belief did you get about yourself? You made your bed.
That it was my fault. Whatever the situation was, it was my fault. And that what I had to do is I had to deal with it. I had to live with it. I had to lay in it.
And for me, you made your bed, now lie in it. The beliefs I took on with that is there's nobody going to be there to help me. Nobody to support me. I'm on my own. Children should be seen and not heard. When you hear that as a child, what beliefs to get around that one?
Go over there and sit down and shut your damn mouth.
Yeah, but you're not important.
And what, you know, and whatever I tell you is the gospel, and you don't have a choice. You don't have a buy-in.
You don't matter.
Right.
You're unimportant. And so from when we're young, we hear those things, and we as individuals take on our own unconscious beliefs, like I'm unimportant, I don't matter, you know, they don't care about me, sit there, be invisible. And so those beliefs take root. They begin to be reinforced when we go into elementary school. You do something wrong and the teacher just reinforces you're a bad girl, boy, person. You don't matter. Get over in the dunce's corner. And we're going to humiliate you publicly, et cetera, et cetera. So you learn to be even more invisible so you don't get that kind of attention. And thus begins the pattern in your life. You will show up as invisible. You may not, I also heard, speak only when spoken to. So you might be silent for quite a long time throughout your life. All those things that we heard, men, boys, suck it up, boys, don't cry. Now you have a generation of emotionally devoid men who are afraid to show their emotions or don't know how. And their wives are like, oh, you know, he doesn't show his emotions, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't know how because he was forbidden to growing up. It's just all of this. The one thing that was not true, what do you think? Money grows on trees? It actually does because it's made of paper and we get our paper from the tree. So that one was blown, right?
Bravo. And you know what? Again, that was something in our household too. My father was so stingy, girl. He could go in his pocket and feel whose face was on which bill. And my mother was just so, you know, free willy. We wouldn't buy one pair of shoes. We'd buy three.
Yeah.
You know, we wouldn't buy one dress. We'd buy two. So I was confused about money. You know, for a long time until I got my head around it. So again, these things and these cliches that are embedded and planted, they plant seeds in us and they grow.
Yes, it creates those underlying beliefs. And when you sit and you look at those, when you're able to, so for example, I could say to you, oh, I see you've got that necklace on today. And that's all I say. You mentally could be saying, I knew I should have put the other one on. She doesn't like it. It's not showing up well on camera. Mm-hmm. All I said was, I see you've got that necklace on today. We do it constantly. We see somebody walking towards us. Let me talk about the three kinds of business. There's your business, and there's my business, and there's the divine's business. And the only time we can ever get in trouble is when we're in somebody else's business. And that's even if it's in our mind. You know, whose business is it what you wear today? it's your business, right? Mm-hmm. Right. It's none of mine, and vice versa. And whose business, the earthquake that happened, I'm not minimizing the damage or the catastrophe of it, but that's the divine's business. There isn't anything I can do about it. So for me to get on a soapbox about it and, oh, let's, you know, do a GoFundMe or whatever they're called, that isn't going to help or change that situation. And to some level, that's God's business. It's not my business. And he, you know, I don't control the weather or anything else. So just stay in my business. When we're in our business, there's no trouble. It's totally peaceful in our own business. But the minute we rehearse conversations we're going to have with people, and maybe we get a little snotty in them and we show up and we're kind of grumpy with that person's innocent. They have no idea we had that whole conversation going on, right? And we show up in a particular way. Or you say to me, Sharon, you are a real so-and-so. And in the past, I would have become defensive. And what do you mean? Da, 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 da. Now I could find, absolutely. I've been a so-and-so many times in my life.
Exactly.
I can say, thank you for your honesty. We don't say we want people to be honest, but are we really ready for that honesty? And then I would also in my mind say, gosh, how must I be showing up for you to have perceived me that way? I realize I have no control over anybody's perception any more than they have control over me. And that's very liberating to know that. At the same time, there are certain vibrations we give up out. So you wouldn't have been able to see me as a so-and-so if I wasn't giving off some kind of vibe. It's right. Like the bully right. Recognizes which kid he can pick on because there's an energy exchange in there, and the bully is hurting. Any person who has any kind of addiction is suffering from a not enoughness, some form of not enoughness inside. They've had some kind of trauma in their early life, and they're looking for relief in all the wrong places.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question, though. Okay, so you say that, let's talk about ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Because people don't own it.
No,
authenticity. You hear them, people say all the time, oh, show up authentic. Sometimes you can't show up authentic because it's not a good look. You know, accountability, all of those things. So if I'm exuding something and you're receiving and you're responding to me, I believe that I have a responsibility, again, to sit with that.
Yes.
To marinate and say, you know, is there something that I am exuding that is causing this energy? Is there something that I need to, you know, unpack, take a look at? Do I have a responsibility to you? But then that makes it confusing because it goes from my business back to your business when the overarching thing is that this could have been God's business to begin with. So it can get confusing there.
It can, but I don't feel I have a responsibility to another. I only have a responsibility to myself. And the fact that you made that statement to me that I'm a so-and-so means you picked up something from me. I need to take corrective action. Let me give an example. We have expectations, and we tend to put that on another person, which is a tremendous burden to put on someone. And we set ourselves up for disappointment. If you want me to love you and I don't give you that love in the way you want, you're going to be irritated. You're going to be angry. And underneath anger is control. And underneath the control is, you don't think I'm important enough to love me enough. But the truth is, you're the only one who knows exactly what it would look like to love you, to support you, to take care of you. Now, if your husband says, I love you, sweetheart, that's his love to give. But if you expect it from him, you are going to continue to feel hurt if he doesn't show up the way you want to. So the expectation needs to stay right with us, and blaming the other for what's going on inside of us is not obviously taking responsibility, right? We must take responsibility. If you get triggered by something I say, I am not the one who has done that to you. I simply made a statement. You are the one that had something triggered, which is an underlying belief about yourself, and that's the moment you're talking about. Sit with it, find it. What was I just believing about myself when she said that, that ticked me off? And it's some form of not enoughness. It's always,
well, how do you gain the release? How do you open that up?
By questioning. So let's say in that scenario I just said, and you sit with it, and you've had a belief since you were a child that you're a bad person. Your mother punished you, you believe, or let's say you believed you're unlovable. Mommy doesn't love me, I'm unlovable. You go through school feeling unloved, unlovable. You get into relationships that just crash, crash, crash. See, it's proof, I'm unlovable, I can't do relationships. And then I say to you, can you know 100% for sure that you're unlovable?
Oh no, I know 10,000% I'm lovable. Well,
you do know that now, but just run with this scene.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. All right. Let me dive back.
So you've been believing all these years you're unlovable. Okay. And then you question, can I absolutely know 100% I'm unlovable? Where's your proof you're unlovable? Right. And you realize in a moment you've never been unlovable. And all that's left is the realization, I've always been lovable. I've always been likable. I've always been enough. The only person you ever have to be enough for is yourself. But we've been trained, I've got to be enough for you and enough for you. And we can never be good enough for somebody else because they have different yardsticks they're measuring with. You just have to be good enough for you. And you'd have to do, when people say, oh, you've got to love yourself. Well, how do you love yourself? If you don't know how, what does that mean? Again, we have been trained since little to put everyone else before us. Let the company eat first. Let them get served first. Let them get seated first. Let them go through the door first. Everybody else first, 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 and you're last. And then as an adult, when you start doing things just for you, there's a twinge of guilt associated with it because we've been so brainwashed that we can't we're not supposed to do this for ourselves. You would give everything you had to your daughter and I would give it to mine, but might feel a twinge of guilt if I go get a manicure because I'm doing something nice for me and I didn't put somebody else before me kind of thing. It's so unconscious and so buried. But if you can catch yourself every time you feel angry, every time you get triggered by something, and you can find, just peel that layer away until you get to the bottom, what was I just believing about myself? My husband said, when I said, do you like this outfit? And he's watching the ball game. And he's intent on his ball game. And he goes, yes, nice. And right back to his ball game. Well, I could just be okay with that. Or I could take offense. Oh, he doesn't love me. He didn't even pay attention. Yeah. And then I can get all angry about him. Underneath that anger, if I sit with it, God, what happened then? Why did I get so angry? He said he liked it. Yeah, but he's not giving me his full attention. That means he doesn't really love me or care enough about me to just stop the game. And then we get this whole story going on in our mind, and it's not even true. It's very real in here, and it's not true.
But you know, it takes years to decompartmentalize all of that. It takes a lot of training. It takes a lot of warning because it's going to surface, I would think, every day. Sometimes some situation happens.
You're responsible for that.
Sometimes people put a direct attack on you now. Come on, Sharon.
Okay, but that was what I just said. You could say, you are real so-and-so. I'm not using a swear word.
Right.
So that's a direct attack. But I know that that's something going on in me. How am I showing up? And I can find that I've been that so-and-so, right? That was the conversation we had before. Right. You do not have the power to make me feel in any particular way. Okay. Only I can do that with my thoughts, how I receive what you say to me. Now, because I've gone through a lot of, I don't know what the right words are, but because I'm where I'm at today, I am able to take that in usually without becoming defensive. I can sit and I say, yeah, you're absolutely right. I can find it. You don't have the power to make me feel happy, sad. You could say something. You know, two people watch the same comedian. One cracks up and one doesn't think he was that funny, right?
Right.
Same joke, two people, same thing, with how we take it in is only. So your husband said something, whose business is it what your husband says or does?
Mm-hmm.
It's his.
Right.
You reacted to it. And you felt a particular way as a result of the conversation. Something underlying in you got triggered that had nothing to do with him. That's like that when I say I'm hiding behind the door and you come in, I go boo. And you say, oh my God, you scared me. No, all I said was boo. You saw the ghosts and goblins and boogeyman and everybody else in that moment, right? Right. The driver on the highway, they cut us off. Instead of, you know, like, oh, I wonder what happened that he's in such a rush like that. We see the accident happened, the blood, the gore, the ambulance. None of it's real. It just happened in our mind. But we go and we look. Something gets triggered in us unless we slow down. But it wasn't him that scared me. It was me that scared me with all the blood and gore and accident that never right. happened outside right. of my mind.
And all of the past trauma. So you're working with people now to unpack this, uncover this. Tell us a little bit about your program. Tell us a little bit about the work that you do and how to get in contact with you.
Okay, so in the very, so one, so we have a course called Blueprint for Stress Release and another one called Is It True? They're actually the same curriculum. One is a self-study, self-paced. The other is spread out over 6 weeks and interactive. In the very first lesson, there's an exercise that you're going to do where you're writing a letter to the person that hurt you the most. And this will never be disclosed to anybody. This is you. And this person hurt you. So it's not, dear so-and-so, you hurt me. This is like, this is what you did. So for me, it was my mother. And it was, you call me the daughter of Satan. You should said I should have smothered at birth. You used me as your punching bag. You were this, that, and the other to me. And I hated you. How did you feel at the time? I felt depressed. I felt sad. I felt rejected, unlovable, unwanted, rejected, da-da-da-da-da. That summed up right there in paragraph 2, all the underlying beliefs I got and that have been running my life. And then the next thing you're going to do is what are the ways it showed up in your life? Well, it showed up in the relationships. It showed up me going into more abusive relationships, da-da-da-da-da. So right from the get-go, you are uncovering those beliefs so it doesn't take years like it did for me to unravel everything. At the same time, to your point, not everything will come up to be looked at just like a buffet. You're not going to eat everything at once on a buffet. Most of it, 99% of it comes up in that letter though. And then through the rest of the course, there are very specific questions in each lesson. And you're going to take one of those beliefs identified in paragraph 2, and you're going to question it against the questions to see if it's true. This isn't about making ourselves feel better, per se. It's about finding the truth. So all those years of believing I was unlovable, only to discover that was never, ever true, and I have been lovable all this time. It's a moment of enlightenment. It's
where did you get your awakening? Did you know, I'm sure that you spent, you know, time, energy, money, and you know, I don't know if it's therapy or the self-awareness or on your knees at the altar, you know.
I did all of the above. Not the therapy part. I did books. I read and read and read. I listened to podcasts. I joined meetup groups. I did the work of Byron Katie, Eckhart Tolle, Michael Singer. I did Holosync for 12 years, which is a brain entrainment program. Wow. And a host of other modalities like that, EFT tapping, lots of different things. But the biggest thing was when I learned to question what I was believing to see if it was true. And all the other modalities were helpful along the way, but that was like the great awakening to find those beliefs. And I remember one woman said to me at the very beginning, she said, "What do you do with your emotions?" And I said, "Well, I stuff them all down." And she said, "Well, what's happening in your outside world?" And I said, "I'm being pushed away and rejected." And she said, "Exactly. Because that's what you're doing. You're ignoring your feelings. You're stuffing them down. When you let them come out, everything changed." My social media manager, she's awesome. And she wrote something yesterday about anxiety. And she said, when you're feeling anxious, speak out loud what it is that's going on inside of you. And she said, when she started doing that herself, she says, "I started laughing because it sounded ridiculous once I voiced it, and it takes the sting out of it." All these little things add up together. But the biggest is questioning what you're believing, because if you don't shift those beliefs, you want to go win that lottery ticket. You've dreamed about it forever, and you've seen it, and you've felt that money in your hands. But on your way there, you're thinking, "Oh, the odds are so high. I'm not going to win. I'm going to win. I'm not. And there's just too many people." Well, what do you think is going to respond? That you're not going to get it.
Because you manifest, you know, what comes out of your mouth is your thought. And we are our thoughts.
Yes. Whatever. Now,
we are the keeper of our thoughts.
We are.
So Sharon, how do people get in contact with you to work with you on, you know, on this level? Because again, brains, it's simpler than you think.
It is. It really is.
And it's easier to identify, you know, and you can't heal a wound until you realize what the root cause is or what it is. And then once it's a scab over it, you can't keep picking at it because it'll never heal.
Yeah.
So we want to heal from that. We want to move forward. We want to embrace that. How do they get in contact with you, Sharon?
So they can visit our website. To contact me directly, you can write email me at info@isittrue.com or info@blueprintforstressrelease.com. They'll both come to me. And you can visit our websites, which are the same names, blueprintforstressrelease.com and isittrue.com. And you can read the course outline. It is easy in as much as the process. It's not so easy. Nothing is going to happen overnight. It takes commitment and diligence. You will do this for breakfast. You will do this anytime you get upset until you have retrained your brain and it becomes on autopilot. You'll get to the point where nothing bothers you anymore because you know it's not true. And you know what's going on with the other person. And they're screaming and yelling at you has nothing to do with you, unless it triggers something in you. Then you're like, "Oh, good, something more to question and see if it's true."
Right. And you know, and again, and that's what I'm going to do. And that's what I've done too. I've had some situations to where, you know, again, like today, you know, I said, "Okay, so how am I going to process what was just said?" It wasn't anything that just, you know, devastated me, but it shocked me. But I was like, "Okay, so how am I going to process this?" You have a choice. You do. And you have to step back and say, you know, was this deliberate or what did it trigger in me? And how can I move forward from that? But brains, you know, I said it was easy. Maybe it's easy to say it, but to practice it and to make it a way of life. You know, it's like people being on a live it. I don't like to call them diets. A person being on a live it, it has to be consistent. You have to be aware of the triggers.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be aware. And then you have to, again, understand where that other person is coming from. But again, when you've got someone that's under the influence, they can just do so much damage to you that you will question yourself, if not damage yourself because of that. So you have to look at that situation. Is there value in this situation? Is this somewhere that I want to stay? Is this healthy for me? Is this healthy for my children? Is this the life that I really want? Is this the life that I deserve? Is this the life that the divine has designed for me? You have to ask yourself these questions and then live with the answer, because again, it all lies within you. Sharon, you have been such an amazing guest here on The Edge, and I thank you so much for the work that you're doing and the honesty that you have displayed here with my guests, because you didn't do that, but you've given me some things to think about, you know, really to not let it affect me. But again, like I said, it's a struggle. Every day is a struggle, because people will pour their ugliness on you like ketchup on some french fries.
And it's, and just remember, it's their ugliness.
It is their ugliness. Personally,
it's theirs. Let it go. It's one thing I know is if you don't make the intention, not you, just in general, if you don't set the intention, and not a January 1st kind of thing, because those don't last. If you're suffering enough in your life and you're at that despair and hopeless feeling, it's a choice whether you do something about it or not. Mm. And what I give is a process that you have for life. And they heard examples of this right now. Our partner's business is their business. Your business is yours. The minute you feel an emotion that's not a nice emotion, or you've been dwelling on the same thing over and over, find the belief you have about yourself and question whether it's true. You just sit with it. It will come up eventually. It might not come up in that moment, maybe a day or two later, because you'll still be dwelling on it. But you realize, yeah, you know, I just believed he didn't really care enough, or whatever it is. But it's on us. That's the responsibility we were talking about earlier. Take responsibility for what's happening inside of you. It has nothing to do with the other person ever.
Right. And brains, you know what? Be gentle when you talk to your kids. Remember what you say. You are planting a seed. Yes. You are planting something organic. And whether you realize it or not, anything that's organic will eventually die. But sometimes, a lot of times, it's going to leave more seeds. Yeah. So do we want these to be seeds of goodness, or do we want them to be weeds? The choice is yours. And we hope that you choose right and you choose often. Thank you again so much for being here on The Edge, Sharon. You are a wealth of information.
Thank you.
Be easy with yourself, okay? We're counting on you.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.